person gave the name of a woman who had access to records on children born in California, and the message said, "To look for your son, birth parents will come back." The fear goes like this: what if my child likes his new birth parents better? These new parents don't come with all the things he was denied. All the punishments, all the broken promises. Birth parents are all fantasy, possibilities. And when they come back, adoptive parents can feel threatened, minded. I can only imagine what my mother was thinking when Lori popped into our lives. Mom voiced some of her concerns, but they were scattered. Could we trust her? She was frightened that a new mother coming in at 30 might steal what they had worked on all their lives, brought up with their money and their time and their love. That she might sweep in and say, "Thanks for taking care of him, we'll be going now." I'm glad Dad knew what to say to her during the first year and a half of this. I certainly didn't know how to care for her and me at the same time. I was making mistakes everywhere. My mother came over to my apartment shortly after I started writing Lori and pointed to a photograph hanging on my wall. She asked me who it was. "Oh, that's my mother," I said without thinking. To her credit, she never changed her expression. I felt awful. I was having a terrible time figuring out what to call this new person who claimed, even sometimes demanded, a mother-child bond that hadn't had 30 years to develop. Over at my folks' house, I would tell my brothers and sister about my mother, as if we had different ones. When typing on the computer, I was aware of my hands, that they were genetically part of the person I was writing. I was being pulled apart by two different histories, one that I had lived, and one that I was. I didn't want to be lost. What would I allow? What should I allow? Did she have rights? Did I? Lori pushed our relationship, and I kept putting the brakes on. If she hadn't been pushing, we wouldn't have progressed as far as we have. If I hadn't been breaking us, it would have been too much for all three parties. At 3 a.m. one morning, she made me find where the line was between her rights and mine. She called me on the phone. Now, on purpose, I'd never given her my number. I wanted to stay in control of some of the relationship. It was my only protection from being overwhelmed by this mother who needed 30 years worth of me. I was groggy at best at 3 a.m. She said she'd call the directory to get my number and just had to hear my voice. I wrote her an email the next day telling her that the phone call was a selfish move. She wasn't giving me any time to get ready for the first phone call I would hear from my birth mother. I didn't even remember the conversation. I was angry and hurt. I understood how important this was to her. It must have been torture to have finally found me but not heard my voice yet or seen my face. She was feeling the finality of a 30-year search, and one more day would kill her. But it was important to me too, and it wasn't fair that she push herself into our lives heedless of the effect. I had to make rules. No free-flowing two-way information river anymore. Now I was going to call all the shots, and she was going to have to deal with it. I don't know if that's what the rule books for meeting your birth parents suggest is the best way to handle the situation. As far as I know, there isn't a book like that. You have to make it up as you go along.